Hey everyone, this episode is with Alex Baudin. He's a 22-year-old French World Tour rider on Decathlon Âge Désert Le Mondial. This was a super fun one because we even started talking about his wild bikepacking trip across Europe. He signed a World Tour contract with his dream team, Âge Désert, but his current team wanted him to stay and so they decided to stop sending him to races because he wasn't going to stay with them. Alex made the most of it and made this crazy bikepacking trip across the Alps. It's an awesome story. I hope you enjoy it. And if you like this type of content and want more, go to howtobecomeaprocyclist.com for books, audiobooks, podcasts, videos, and other fun stuff. You've had a great start to the season, eh?
Yeah, it was pretty great for the start. Fortunately, I had a couple of races canceled because of manifestation, but
because of what?
So, it is what it is. Because of farmers, you know, in Europe protesting, and there was not enough security on the races, so I had one stage in Bessèges canceled, and basically all Ruta del Sol canceled also in Spain.
Fun. Normally they save it for the July and the Tour de France to start protesting.
Yeah.
Where are you based in Europe?
I live in Aix-les-Bains.
Aix-les-Bains. Oh, yeah. I know this. Where is this?
Chambéry.
The Alps.
Yeah, Annecy also. Okay. Annecy.
Cool. Is that where kind of, like, are you from there?
Yeah, I was born in Albertville.
Okay.
So just next to Chambéry and Annecy.
Ah, it's beautiful there. I've done one training camp in Annecy and Albertville over there. Yeah. It's super nice. We stayed on, do you know the Col de la Croix Frie, I guess? Like F-R-Y?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we stayed up on top of that. It's super nice.
It's super nice, yeah.
Yeah, really cool. Awesome. Is that, man, that must be perfect because you were with Âge Désert and you would have ridden. Yeah, you did ride for the Chambéry team, like their development team, right at home.
Yeah, it was the team from home, you know. So it was the dream to join them for a long time.
Yeah, really cool. That lines up really well for you. Hey, we actually, you know, we raced against each other once in 2022. You had a really good result. The Istrian Spring Trophy races.
You were there.
Yeah, these crazy races in Croatia.
Yeah, it was nice. It's now actually they are riding it now.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's the Istrian Spring Trophy is a nice race, but there's always, because it's the UCI stage race, but then I think there's another like one day races we do there, and I don't know if they're UCI races, but they're always. They're absolute chaos. Do you remember which ones these are? You do the circuit races?
Yeah, it's Trofeo UMAG and Trofeo Porec.
That's it, yeah.
The two one-day races, and then after it's in Istrian Spring Trophies.
Yeah.
But I didn't do the one-day races.
Oh, you're smart. I feel like when I go to these races, I need to wear hockey pads. They're so dangerous.
The guys told me that was really dangerous. It was rainy, I think, and really slippery there.
Yeah. And it's just, I think, I don't know if they're, maybe they are UCI races, but maybe they're not, but there's something where like
they are.
You have like just way more teams. Like there's, the fields are huge for it. And then it's just kind of like a free for all, like anybody doing it. And it's really crazy. Yeah, that's fun.
Which team were you?
With Felbermayr.
In these races?
The blue team, the Austrian blue team, Felbermayr.
Okay.
And you were with Swiss Racing then, right? The Swiss Racing Academy.
Yeah. It was Swiss before Tudor.
Okay, yeah. Did you sign with Âge Désert while or before you were on Tudor? Because you were on the Chambéry development team. Did you already sign with the World Tour team and then you just did an extra year?
No. It was not really good with Chambéry, so I left to Swiss Racing Academy.
Oh, okay.
And then I signed after my good results in 2022.
Okay. What was up with Chambéry?
You know, that's why the team doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Now we have the U23 team, but it's a whole new project. But before it was Chambéry Cycliste Formation. a whole other management, and it wasn't like it was a little bit old school, I would say, and so they weren't attractive to the good riders anymore. So nobody would come, and the level just dropped, you know. Okay. So they had to stop.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've heard interesting stories. I mean, like, all those teams are very similar, but like Matteo Jorgensen was my teammate the year before he went to that team.
And he was there before me.
Yeah. I mean, he made it all the way, so he made the most out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Exactly.
Man, so how was the winter training this year? Clearly, you've started the season well.
Yeah, it was really great. We did some good training camps in Spain, and the work was good, so I could have some result in the start of the season. So yeah, I'm happy.
Cool. When did you start training again for this year? Like, when? How long was the break you took between ending last season and restarting this season? Like, how long was that off season break?
This year I took 1 month approximately, and I restarted training I think the 10th of November.
Okay. What do you do for like your break from the bike? Do you do anything else? What do you do when you're not training?
Actually, I went to Canada.
Really? Where?
In Quebec. I have a family there.
Okay.
I have two uncles who lives there for like now 15 years. So they are like real citizens of Canada now.
Okay.
And so I went there and just worked with them, spent some time easy away from home. It was super nice.
Okay. The Canadian version of French is really strange, eh? This is not French.
Yeah.
It's really what is this?
It's not French. it's a whole other language.
Oh my goodness. Because my first year in Europe, I had a bunch of teammates that spoke French. And so I was just used to hearing that around the dinner table and stuff. And then when I went home at the end of the year and I heard our Canadian French in the airport, and I'm like, oh my God, what is this? This is not, this is really funny.
Yeah.
Do you do any sort of like cross training or fun stuff? Other sports?
No.
You don't do like cross country skiing or running, anything else?
Cross country. Yes. But sadly, this winter, not too much, but, there's not enough snow anymore. It's really hot winter. So I went just 3 times on the ski. But it's too bad because I really like that. And before I was doing, I think 2 years ago, I did some races and it was really fun to change. It's like really hard effort for these races. And I think it's really good for preparation for the season.
Yeah, I love it. And I mean, I think it's I think it's easy to max out your heart because you're using your whole upper body as well. So like,
crazy.
Like you think you're going all out on the bike, but you kind of, once you try cross country skiing, you realize that on the bike, it's kind of like your legs max out before your heart and your lungs do.
Yeah.
And then you try to do like vertical running and trail running or cross country skiing, and you're just like, my lungs are exploding.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I think I did my record ever on one race. Is Marathon de Besson. It's a really known race in here. It's like 42Ks. And I think I did 2 hours, 10 minutes, 175 average BPM. And for me, it's crazy. I can never do that on the bike. So yeah, it's full gas for 2 hours.
That is nuts. Yeah, I don't have... How long was it? 2 hours and how much?
2 hours and 10 minutes. Okay. I think the win was 2 hours. And I did... I was 10 minutes for the first guys.
That is crazy. Yeah, because I don't think I ever got even close to that in like... I definitely didn't get that high of an average heart rate for mountain bike racing. And I did a vertical trail run that was like an hour and 10 minutes or something like that. And I think my average heart rate was like 175 or something like that. And I remember when I finished that, I'm like, I would never do this on the bike. Like there's no time trial that lasts this long. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So you don't do any of that stuff, or you haven't done any of that kind of stuff this last year. Do you do any running or anything else?
No, not much running because I have some problems with my ankle, and I cannot really run with the shocks, you know. So cross country skiing is better. It's like smooth.
Yeah, for sure. And it's fun. Like the other thing, it's like a reward when you spend so much time on the bike. If you can actually do a winter sport in winter when it's snowing, not riding the bike, it's enjoyable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool. Can you ride outside in near Annecy and Albertville there in the winter?
Yeah. Right now, the winters are not so rough anymore. And basically we are not so much here in the winter, you know, with the training camps and the season starting really early now. So yeah, for the time we are here, we can manage the weeks. If one day it's raining, like you just change mm-hmm. the days you're riding, and it's no problem.
Yeah, cool. And then how many training camps did you have this year with the team in the winter?
Two, one in December and one in January.
And where were they?
The first one was in Gandia, north of Calpe, and the second one in Lanuccia, south of Calpe.
Okay.
So we changed the routes, so it was nice.
Cool. And what are the differences between the first and the second training camp? Because they're not so far apart, December and January, and then you're racing.
Yeah, it's not far apart but in December, it's like mid-December, so basically you have 1 month of training in your legs, so it's more based on endurance, you know. And in Gandia, it's really nice because it's more flat than in the south of Calpe, so when you are riding in groups like that, it's good to have like 1 hour flat at the start and 1 hour flat at the end of the ride. So if you cooked, like, you know, you can recover and don't be full every day. And in January, when we start to do more intense work, it's nice to have some climbs to do and it's more specific. So it's good like that, I think. Yeah.
Okay. And then do you guys do any testing at these camps?
Not that much, actually. We did only 1 day test in January. We did that 20 minute test and a 5 minute test, but with some exercise between them. So we had 3,000 kilojoule before the 5 minute test to see, you know, how much you can push after a lot of work, because that's what we are aiming to do now. The races are super hard, and now you have to, the decisive moments are at the end of the race. So I would say that my power didn't increase a lot for the last 3 years, but now I can do the same with a lot of fatigue before.
Interesting. Yeah, like fatigue resistance. So have they taught you anything to like improve that? Like, how do you think you get better at that? What do you think are the things that matter to improve that?
I think the most important part on this is your FTP zone, because the difference between amateur races and the pros is the tempo you are every day. Like in a Grand Tour, it's 300, 350 all day. And it's in this zone that when you are young, you struggle because you are not used to it. And for that, we do some lactate test to see your zones. And between last year and this year, I could see like the difference with 1 year of pro in the legs, that I improved a lot in that particular zone. So now I feel like not easy, but comfortable in this zone, 300, 350, when you are always in a race.
Okay. So when you guys do lactate testing, you're looking at like the two lactate points, right? Like the first lactate threshold and the second lactate threshold, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And just to make sure I'm understanding you, what you're saying is that second, the higher, like your threshold, that hasn't improved that much, but the first threshold, the lower one, has improved a lot? Is that what?
The higher one also improved, but it's the lower one that improved more. It's called, we call that test MLSS. I don't know if it's the same in English, but I could see that I gained pretty much 20, 30 watts in this zone. Like my lactate was really, really lower than last year and in this zone. So it's crazy just by racing and training in FTP, how much you can improve on that. And it's kind of frustrating at the start because you don't see improvements really fast when you are training in these zones, like when you are training at high intensity, because it's lower. And I had to wait like July, August to see that I was really improving in that zone.
Okay. And then, so what sort of things, I mean, do you think it's just race days, or is there anything else that you've changed in your training? Like, is it more volume this year, or did you make any sort of other changes to your training, or is it just the race days?
The race days and also my training. My coach told me at the start of the year last year that the goal was to increase my FTP, and I was working a lot in this zone. Like I did some 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, a little bit lower than FTP. So it's not really hard to do during training, but it's really demanding, and like you get really tired by doing this. So you don't see, like I said, you don't see the improvements right away, but it's a long-term training. And then after with the Giro and a Grand Tour, it's obviously really good for that also. And you see that it's not a legend, but after a Grand Tour, you gain just strength and power. It's crazy.
And is it just like, what is it about the Grand Tour? Is it, it's just, you just push yourself harder than ever before in it? What do you think is it that you're different after a Grand Tour?
No, not really, because last year I kind of survived the Giro, but I didn't do so great. But you don't push to the limit every day, because sometimes it's just too hard every day. Like it's a big tempo and you are just cooked. And so you don't go full. You just crack when you are out of fuel, you know. You're not full gas. You just, I don't know how to explain it. You're not full gas, but you can't just stay in the bunch. It's too demanding. I don't know. So yeah, it's not that you push to the limit, but it's every day, this high tempo in World Tour or races that make you progress, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What are the three workouts that you do the most? You'd say, like, just between like when you started training in November to now, what are the three sessions that you do the most?
let me think. I think it depends, because it's not really the same between December and January. It's changing, so. I think, yeah, strength sessions on the bike. For me, I think it's really important. I think I really need that to do like 50 RPM work. to just feel the power, feel the bike, and then yeah, it's always over unders also of FTP. I do a lot of that. I really like also, and a third one, I don't know. But for the moment, I didn't work a lot of on high intensity or light tick. I didn't do a lot for the moment. The work for the start of the season was more based on, yeah, FTP, over unders and stuff like that.
Okay, and then so the strength work, like the torque work that you do, so it's 50 RPM. Like how long are the intervals? What is like the interval session?
Also, again, it depends. But for example, we do a lot of like 3 minutes, 300 watts, maybe 50 RPM, 1 minute, 50 RPM, but out of the saddle to work also with your whole body, I would say. Because in the race, you know, you are not always on the saddle. And then the most important, I think, is to work velocity just after to keep the pedal stroke and we increase the power on the 1 minute velocity.
Okay.
And then it's 5 minutes and you do it three times and then you start again for two or three times the whole thing, I think.
Okay, so the whole interval is 5 minutes long. So it's like 3 minutes, low 50 RPM seated, 1 minute, 50 RPM standing, 1 minute, high cadence.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and three times in a row.
Okay, cool. And then how do you guys do it? And then what do you do for the over-under workout then?
Also, it's changing a lot. It's never the same, but most of the time it's 3 or 2 or 3 minutes over FTP and 1 minute under FTP, and then in the same session we do the opposite, 3 minutes under FTP and 1 minute over FTP.
Okay. And then how long is the block?
Yeah.
How long is that block? Like 10 minutes, 20 minutes? How long is it?
Most of the time it's around 12, 15 minutes.
Okay. Cool.
And we do this, like, I can do this two or three times in a session.
Okay. And do you do much training in the gym at all?
In the winter, yes. Not during the season, because it's really hard when you start racing to
find the time
not find the time, but when you have to stay in shape for the race. And the gym session for me, it's not really tiring, but you feel on the bike just after you feel on the bike. You are not as efficient as you are. And I think it's hard to recover from it and be able to race the weekend, for example, 100%. So we focus on that during the winter, and then we just do some core training during the season, but high weights not during the season.
Okay. And then during the winter when you are in the gym, which exercises do you do?
We do a lot of things. It changes also because we have always new coaches, new methods. But yeah, basically it's strengthening your whole body. The muscles we miss on the bike, you know, in the back, in the arms. It's important to rebuild it during the winter, because we maybe lose some muscle during the season, and so we focus on that and also on legs.
So is it like squats?
Day, or,
is it like squats?
Yeah,
or deadlifts?
Squats under the press. Yeah,
squats, leg
but,
press.
Yeah, squats.
Okay, mm-hmm. Cool, interesting. And so, how was it for you? So you left from Chambéry, you went to the Swiss Racing Academy, and then you step up to the World Tour. When did that happen? When did you sign that World Tour contract?
I signed during the summer, after I performed in Tour de Bretagne. We started to chat with AG2R, and during the summer I signed more with them.
Cool. Well, that's got to be life dream come true, eh? And the home team.
Yeah, it's a really special moment when because I knew the team. I always wanted to go. I had the possibility to stay in Tudor. They wanted me to, because they were going to be
Pro Conti,
and but in my head I was like, I would regret if I had the opportunity to go to my home team and didn't go. So, you know, I had to pursue that dream.
Amazing. Very cool. Did you have an agent or were you doing it by yourself?
Yeah, I have an agent, but honestly, I could have done without the agent because I knew the team, but it's always easier with an agent.
Sure. And then, but how did it go? Like, after Brissage, like a week later, you get a phone call one night when you're having dinner, or how does it go?
Oh yeah, the agent just called, and because I had other opportunities in other teams also, so he just called and said that it was okay. They wanted me, and we had to find a date to sign.
Very cool. Did you go to the service course to sign the contract or something like that?
Yeah. It's just near, it's in Chambéry, so it's not far from home.
That's got to be cool. And then when you get so last year was your first year in the World Tour. So what are some of like the coolest things that you get from the team? Like you get so much cool stuff, right? Like you get a million jerseys, you get all the cool stuff from the sponsors. What's the coolest thing you've gotten from the team? Or the thing you're most excited about? Like you just get weird things. Like,
yeah, weird things. I don't know. For sure, you have a lot of things, maybe too much. And it's also cool to, in the end of the season, to give all that stuff away to your friends. So I think it's the coolest thing because all that we have, it's clothes, bikes, you know, computers, but I think what made me happy after that, because we changed the kit, you know, so I had to give away everything, and I just gave them to my friends, and they were super happy, you know, so to give that to friends, it's really cool, you know, to make the people happy with that.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is cool. And especially it's cool for them too, because it's not like they bought it somewhere. It's like, oh no, this is the real team kit, and like I know one of the riders.
It's the real team, and I have friends that's are cyclists, and you know, now the kids' computers are getting really, really expensive. And so it's easier for them to have some good stuff, and the same as me. So they are really, really happy with that.
Yeah, that's cool. What's been like the moment you've been the most excited since you signed the World Tour contract? Like signing that first contract with your home team, that's got to be pretty big. Doing the Giro, that's got to be big. Like, what's the most excited you've been in the last couple of years?
The most excited I've been, I think it's when they told me I was going to ride the Giro. It was not on the program. I was supposed to be to do Vuelta. And 2 weeks before, just after Liège, I finished Liège. And they told me I was going to the Giro. So At first, I was a little bit scared because I was completely cooked after Liège. And I knew I had only 2 weeks to recover and prepare for the Giro, which was kind of mission impossible, you know. But it was, yeah, I was really excited to do Giro, and it was an amazing experience.
Yeah, so the Giro last year, that it was a crazy race too. That was one of my favorite ones to watch. I mean, I don't know what it was like for you racing it, but it was fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it was fun to watch. And I think the weather, the parkour, all the scenario was really great. Not maybe for the battle of GC, but every day it was always basically breakaway going to the finish line. So fighting for the win. So it was really, really nice race. And every day we had the opportunity to go in the front and just race, you know, just not wait every day to just drop. We had a super nice race, yeah.
No, I just remember there was a couple like really big standout performances there. Like the last time trial, like for Primoz to win it on the last time trial was really cool. Mm-hmm. But also the one that I think about that I think everybody forgets about is Remco's opening time trial in that Giro. How strong he was in that. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
That was another level. Like I think he gave 40 seconds or something to Ghana in that TT. Like, geez, okay. Well, this is going to be a boring race. He's going to win everything.
Yeah, it was amazing at the start. In the bus, we were like, how much do you think Remco will put us on the TT? And we were like, oh, maybe two minutes and a half. And I think I was like 3 minutes from him. So I'm like, what the fuck?
he probably just had a better skin suit. That's all it is.
Maybe
better skin suit, better helmet. That's all. Different tires. Yeah, that's all.
That's
it. Yeah. Man, so what did you do in the 2 weeks from finishing Liège to the start of the Giro?
I tried to recover as much as possible and just try to be as fresh, you know, as I could. But it was hard because I did a lot of races. In the start of the season, I did Australia, I did UAE, Pays Basque, a lot of world tour races. And I think I was already really tired. And I didn't do a lot during these 2 weeks to arrive as fresh as possible, you know.
Okay. Do you ever do your own training camps anywhere? Like, do you ever go anywhere else by yourself to go for training? Or where you live is awesome already. I was just, do you go anywhere else?
Last summer I went to, it's not far from home. It's in La Plagne in Savoie, in altitude. I went by myself with one other guy of the team, one friend. We did 2 weeks altitude together, so it was nice, but I never went anywhere else. So.
Okay. How was it there? Because I know some of the women's teams that have gone there, but I don't know. I've never been there, or I haven't talked to any other guys that have been there.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's basically the same than in team where Jumbo always are. A lot of teams going there in team. It's just before in the valley, and I think it's a little bit better to ride because you can go, you have more choices to ride in the mountains, because team you have to go down and go back up, and it's like 30 km or something, so it can be annoying, I think, during 3 weeks. And La Plagne, you have more choices. You can do Col de la Loz. It's not far. You can go to Albertville, to my home. You have more choices.
Okay, so you like La Plagne. How do you say it? I can only...
La Plagne.
Okay, yeah. I can't say it. I can read it, but I can't say it. You like that?
Yeah.
You like it there better than Tignes?
Yeah.
Cool.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, cool. And then I just from stalking your Instagram account, you did you do the Tour de Mont Blanc on your bike?
Yeah. That was a funny story. We were in Chambéry Formation, and we were supposed to race like French Cup, and it was canceled last minute because of the lack of of organization. I don't remember. And we were like on the place of the race the day before, and we started hearing some like, it's gonna be canceled, it's gonna be canceled. And with one friend, we just made a joke. Oh, if it's canceled, we said we do Tour de Mont Blanc tomorrow. Just joking. And finally it's canceled. So, you know, we said, okay, let's go. And so we didn't do it the day after, but 2 or 3 days after, with the weather, it was perfect. And so we did that with one friend. I think it was 14 hours on the bike.
That's crazy.
Really great day.
What are the stats from it? It's huge, 14 hours, but like it's like more than 300 kilometers and like 8,000 meters of climbing or something, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's 340 and 8,000 kilometers with, I think the exact was 13 hours, 40 minutes, I think. But, you know, easy ride endurance.
So. Yeah, easy ride. 14 hours, 340K and 8,000 meters of climbing. Easy day, yeah.
it's super nice.
Cool. I love those days, but I'd love to do that. That's like a bucket list route for me. I want to do the Tour de Mont Blanc as the running race and the bike. I do it for the bike as well. But there's
for the bike, I think it's really good. But it's nice to do it once. But you know, it's in the end, it's always big roads and there's a lot of traffic, and even in the climbs, you know, you always traffic. And, especially during summer. So it's nice, but it's not the best roads you can do around here. But, you know, on Strava, when you have the Tour du Mont Blanc,
then it's cool.
You can be proud of it at the end of the day. So, yeah, it's nice to do it once. But if I want to do some long rides like that again, I will try another one. You
know? Okay. Yeah, it's cool. Where's your favorite place to go training or ride? Where's your favorite, like, even go on a bike holiday anywhere? Where would you go?
Bike holiday, maybe in Dolomites in Italy.
Yeah, that's my favorite place. It's awesome.
Yeah,
man.
It's awesome. Yeah. In 2022, I did a bike trip around Europe. And so I did like 30, 35 days on the bike alone. Total I did almost 5,000 kilometers, and so I started in Dolomites in Italy, and was one of the highlights of the trip, I think.
I mean, I'm surprised you say that. Everybody obviously knows the Dolomites, but most people wouldn't say that as their favorite spot, but that's by far my favorite place to go trotting.
Yeah, it's amazing,
all the passes around there. Yeah, that's my favorite loop anywhere. And it's like, for me, it's an hour in the car to get to the base of it. And then you can do huge rides there, and you can do, 8,000 meters of climbing if you want, but do it in 250K. Yeah. And it's like beautiful roads.
So. Yeah.
Where did you do this bike trip, though? So do you just do it at the end of the season or something?
So I had some kind of troubles with the Trudeau at the end of the year of 2022. Because they really wanted me to stay, and there was this one guy, the manager in 2022, which who is like, he got fired now, so I think it was not me the problem. So he wanted me to stay, and when I told him that I was leaving to AG2R, he got mad And then after he decided not to make me race again for the rest of the season. So my last race was Tour de l'Avenir with the French team in August. And after I had nothing, so I decided to leave for 1 month with my bike, with my tent. And I did a GPX on Strava around Europe and I did it.
Did you sleep in your tent the whole time for a month?
Yeah.
You like the full Lachlan Morton idea. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really, really great. Nice experience, yeah.
Did you have good weather the whole time? Wait, sorry, which month was this?
It was September. I started it in September and I got back at the beginning of October. So, yeah.
And you had good weather the whole time?
I had not the whole time. I counted the rainy days. I think it was like 10 or 12 rainy days, but not rain all day. Like, you know, just a little bit wet, but was okay.
But you're getting into like a tent and you have to put on wet clothes the next day, or were you stopping anywhere to do laundry or to shower?
I always managed to stay dry in a way. I don't know how. When I stopped in cities, you know, I slept in hostels, so I could have a real bed and the laundry.
Okay, so there were a couple days you slept in a bed. You didn't sleep in the tent every day.
No, but not every day, but the majority of it.
Okay.
When, you know, I stopped just in cities, I had the opportunity to have a bed and to cook myself some dinner, hot dinner, because every day I was eating sandwiches or something. So...
That's awesome. So where did this, you started in the Dolomites and where did you go from there? Which town?
Yeah. So
which city in the Dolomites did you start in?
City or I town? I don't know, but, I started in Albertville, in my hometown. I did, Cormet de Roseland. You know, Cormet de Roseland?
No, I don't know that one. Sorry.
it's really not, I think it's the pronunciation maybe.
Oh, okay.
So Roseland, Petit Saint-Bernard, then I went to Aosta.
Oh, I do know these clients. Yeah, okay. You're saying it the proper way. Yeah. I say it the idiot English way. Yeah, okay. I know your client.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. Then Aosta, then right to Lugano. Mm-hmm. So a little part in Swiss. Then I crossed border to Swiss again in St. Moritz. Then I went to, I did the Bernina Pass after St. Moritz to Livigno. And then all the passes in Livigno, amazing, Stelvio. So after I was in Stelvio, Merano, after it was another pass to Austria. Then I did all Tirol, Innsbruck. Then after Slovenia, I stopped in Bled, Ljubljana.
Wait, you went all the way from Innsbruck to Slovenia. That's like 5 days right there.
Oh, yeah.
That's not
small.
In total,
it was 35 days, so...
Okay.
But at the start, I think the first 7 days, I did like 40, 45 hours on the bike. Every day I was riding 6-7 hours. It was crazy. And then after I slowed down because I was really tired. So then, yes, Slovenia, Croatia, I did whole Croatia on the coast, Montenegro. Albania. Then I took a ferry from Albania to Italy in Bari. I did all south of Italy to Sicily. I went to Catan, Palermo also. Then I took a ferry to Sardinia. I did all Sardinia, Corsica, sorry, and then ferry again to France, Toulon, and I came back home.
That is insane. That is so cool. How much, like, you did this on just your race bike? Like your training bike, I mean?
Yeah. I have the BMC.
and then
with the bags.
And then what bags did you have? Did you have like a handlebar bag or a saddle bag, or how did you do it?
Yeah. The whole the saddle bag. I had a tent, my mattress and stuff. Had a handle bag with all my clothes. Another one on the cockpit, and another one under the
in the frame,
the bike in the frame. Yeah.
Okay. And then what were you eating all day? Like, were you just like going gas station to gas station, just buying sandwiches and whatever?
Yeah. I was eating a lot. I was doing, gas stations, supermarkets. I would like find my spot for the night, go to supermarket, buy some food, and just make camp, eat, and start again in the morning. I would stop in a cafe in the morning for my breakfast, and then ride.
Okay, so you weren't cooking anything; you were just buying all the food.
No, I didn't have the space for cooking anything, so I was just buying.
Okay, I think that's a good call. I think as soon as you have to start bringing stuff to cook with, it's so much extra stuff you have to carry. It's so much more work.
Yeah.
You're dead at the end of the day.
Yeah, I didn't have so much space in the bags. It was really, really light.
Yeah. That is so cool. Do you think you'll do a trip like this again at some point?
Yeah, I would like to, but maybe not alone, because one full month alone.
You need a lot of
can
podcasts.
Be long sometimes. not really. I didn't have any headphones or anything. I just was alone all day, and I deleted all social media. I just had my phone to go on Google Maps and just call my girlfriend and my parents to tell them I'm okay. But I did like a whole month alone, you know, nothing, no distractions. And it was long, but it was really good, really good for me, I think.
That's so cool. How did you come up with the route for this?
I don't know. I just went on Strava and started to try some things, I figured that, so yeah.
That's so cool. That's awesome, man. That is like the dream vacation. But that, I mean, the nice thing is, because you guys have no time to do it, right? Like the time between when you stop racing, like some guys finish racing in China at the end of October,
yeah,
and then you start racing Tour Down Under in January. It's like you have no time to do a trip like this. So you got lucky that the manager didn't like you on Tudor. Be like, okay, man, I'm going on vacation. Contract signed. I'm out.
Maybe not lucky, but you know,
you made the most of
it.
I
said like, I made the most of it. It was maybe the only opportunity I would have in the next
10 years.
10 years for my whole career. So yeah, my girlfriend was not here because she was studying in Canada, in Toronto. And I had no races. So I was like 1 month at home doing nothing. No way. So I had to do something, and I just went.
You're not going to sit at home for a month. You're going to ride your bike around Europe.
Yeah,
you don't get enough of that in the races. Impossible. You're like, I want to do more. Well, the nice thing is, it's like when you do like a trip like this, you can actually see the places you look. Like you can look up at the mountains and stuff like that. Versus when you're in the race, if you start looking around, oh, it's a nice mountain. You hit a pothole or something like that, and be like, oh, poof.
Yeah, and you know, I was all alone, so I did what I wanted to do. No one was, you know, telling me to do something. If I wanted to stop, I stopped. If I wanted to see that, I saw that. You know, so yeah, it was really, really nice.
Okay. And then is this, because one of the really cool thing you have on your Instagram is you have this map, and it's like the route Is this that route? That is that what you're talking about? Like the map? It's from this trip.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Exactly.
So what is the company that makes this? Do you just send them the route, like whatever your bike ride is, and then they just print you a map with the route on it?
Yeah, so it's called MapRides, I think. It's a friend of Jaakko Anninen. You know, he's on the team, AG2R. Mm-hmm. He's from Finland. And so the site is like you connect your Strava and you choose the dates you want, the rides you want, and it just appears on the map. Then you choose the map. You have different maps you can choose. You have different colors. You can write whatever you want, and then you can just print it on the Canva on just a piece of paper, and then it's like perfect.
That's so cool. So what's it called? MapRides?
Yeah, MapRides, I think.
MapRides. Okay. Because, yeah, I remember, I think Alex Dowsett posted about this like years ago, and I saw it, and I'm like, this is so cool. But then I could never find it again. But then I saw it on news. I think that's the same thing.
Maybe I know some guys who did, Jaakko Anninen did all these grand tours he did, like the Vuelta, the Giro. So you have a nice map. And now I figured like it's a big loop, so it can be nice. So yeah, it's nice.
It's really cool. And then like that's a great like Christmas gift idea. Like when you're trying to think of like gifts to somebody, that's cool.
Really, really good idea.
So could I take my Strava account and just make it like all the dates of my career, like my entire career, and then have like a map?
Your whole life around the world, you can zoom in, you can do everything you want on the site.
And you can just print it off yourself. Like I could just, you just get a file that you can, or do you have to,
you have to buy and they print it for you and it's delivered.
Okay.
But
Yeah, super cool. This isn't a sponsor plug. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool idea. I love maps. That's awesome.
Yeah.
The way I've done it is I have maps like that, but I like draw on them with a marker. I'm like, oh, this seems way better. I just plug my Strava in and it does it for me. Super cool.
Yeah.
Man, that is so cool, the bikepacking trip you did. So do you have any other sort of fun hobbies that you do? If you don't have time for sports, but do you do anything else? Like other fun stuff other than cycling?
Other than cycling, I just like to cook a lot. So when I'm home, I can spend days just cooking all day. So
Okay.
I really like it.
How about this then? If I gave you 10,000 euros to spend on a toy, you can't like invest it, you can't save it, you have to spend it on a toy. What would you spend 10,000 euros on?
A toy?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I don't know, man.
A coffee machine.
A coffee machine. I really like coffee. It's like every other cyclist on the planet, maybe, but it's coffee and cycling. So yeah, maybe a really nice coffee machine. I'm not much into cars, you know, but 10,000 is not enough for a car. So yeah, maybe a coffee machine, La Marzocco or something like that.
Yeah, cool. You're not into cars though? You don't like cars? Are you not really into cars?
I like cars, but you know, it's, I'm happy with the one I have and, first, I want to buy an apartment, a house, and then if I can buy a car, I'll see after.
Okay. Do you know, have you ever heard the term a Monday car? Do you know what this is from the cyclist?
No.
Okay. So I think you know, I heard about this from one of my friends, and I think you know who, I won't say who it is, but three of us were on the team together. One of us made it to the world tour, and the other two of us, we were talking one time, and he's like, oh yeah, I was hanging out with so-and-so and he took me for ripping his Monday car and he lives close to you. That's why I think you know who this is. And he went for ripping his Monday car. I'm like, what's a Monday car? He's like, you know, like Monday's your rest day after you race. So you typically race on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Monday's your rest day. And then so you go for a rip in the fun car on Monday and you just go blasting through the mountains in the Porsche or something like that. Like something really crazy. But it's like this one at least is like a Porsche GT3. So do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. I won't say the name here, but that's as, or when I talk to some of the other guys in Andorra, they call it an airport car, like the, because they have such a long drive to get from Andorra to Barcelona.
Yeah.
It's like a fast car to get there.
I don't know what, who you're talking about, but I know how the guys doing the same. So
do you know any guys that have cool cars, like any of the cyclists? Because that's such a cool thing, but no of the cyclists ever show it off.
Around here, I know, Aurélien Parépentre have a nice Mercedes. I don't know exactly the model, but also Ben O'Connor, nice Porsche. He went to training camp with this one time, so I saw it. Really nice car.
That's cool. Yeah, those are Monday cars.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's very cool. What's the next big race you have coming up?
Next race is Catalunya.
Catalunya. Have you done it before?
And then, no. And then I do Pays Basque, which I did last year also. Hmm. So two other races in a row, it would be hard days.
What's the big goal for this year? What's the biggest one that you're focusing for?
The Giro, I think. This time is on the program, so I can, prepare. It's planned to go in altitude in April to get fit. And I hope, I can be in good shape in the Giro.
Okay. Where are you going in April for a training camp?
I will go to Prémanon. It's in Jura, in France. Mm-hmm. It's not in altitude, but they have hypoxic room.
Oh, cool. Have you used that before? Have you done that before?
No, never. It will be the first time, but I figured, it's really nice to ride up here in Jura, and it's more comfortable to have a whole apartment in altitude than just a tent in my house.
Have you ever used one of the tents in your house?
No, never. I think it can be good for a few days for acclimatization, for adaptation, or to finish a training camp, but for 2-3 weeks in the tent in your house, I think it can be really annoying for me and for my girlfriend, especially.
Really? You don't have a girlfriend after this?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Crazy. Hey, what do you think? Like, obviously, this is only your second year in the World Tour, and you're really young, but what do you think are the things that guys are focusing on now in training, like to get better? What are they focusing on right now that they weren't doing like 5 years ago, for example? What are the new ways that guys are pushing the limits?
I think now it's more focusing on IO than ever. It's going crazy. Like, we were doing tests on the track, and then now, you have the socks, you have the TT suits, the guys are riding the TT suits during the races now. So you have now the new helmets from EF, from Ineos. Like, where this is going, I don't know, but they have to stop. When we saw the EF guys in Bessège the first day with TT suit and the aero helmet, we were like, guys, seriously. I think it's really important. We have a lot of studies that show that you can win a lot, but it's going crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
How wide are your handlebars on your bike?
I think it's 38 now.
38. Okay. That's still reasonable, but I was talking to.
Yeah. And before I had a 42, 44.
Yeah.
It changed a lot in like 2-3 years.
Yeah. Like I have two road bikes here, and one has 40s and one has 36s. And I tried to get used to the 36, and I'm like, this is so tiny. Like on the flats, it's fine. But when you actually start having to fight for position or like going on the downhills and stuff, I'm like, I just don't feel like I can descend as fast on this. I don't think it's as good. Yeah. And now there's guys that have like 34 centimeter bars with the shifters twisted in. So it's like 32 on the inside. I'm like,
yeah, it's crazy. I think you can get used to it. I think the ones we have, it's the data and the bars, it's maybe 36 and 38 on the bottom. So
that's better. At least if it's a bit wider on the bottom, and then when you're like, it's no problem to ride on the flats and when you want to be really aero and stuff, or like if you're in a pace line, but when you're descending, it's nice to have it a little bit wider. Like it, I don't know. Yeah. I feel safer with it. I like it when it's a bit wider.
Yeah. But now, you know, in the bunch, the thinner it is, you can go
through the holes. Yeah, exactly.
Through the holes. So yeah, it's more practical, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. You have to do it. If everybody else is doing it, you can't ride 40 centimeter handlebars anymore. Yeah. You can't do it. Man, you know what I think is going to be you know where I think it goes when you're saying, hey, where does it go from here? And this is terrifying. But so now everybody goes up the mountain just as fast. Like the difference between the first place guy and the last place guy is pretty much the same. So everybody pushes it so hard on the downhills now. And then you're looking at your Garmin to see the map, to see the corners where you're going.
Yeah.
I think the next thing is, so for skiing, you can get these heads-up displays that go inside your goggles. So it's like a screen inside your goggles so you can see. Mm-hmm. I think the next thing is going to be sunglasses that have a heads-up display. Yeah. And so guys are seeing it on their sunglasses.
We talked about that, also, I think it will be crazy, and really dangerous also, but I really hope we don't do that.
Because then it's like guys are going to be so focused on the screen on their glasses, they're not looking at the riders bouncing around in front of them. It's, oh.
Yeah, it's already dangerous like that enough in the bunch, so please no.
Yeah, really. No kidding. And then I'm sure Dan Bigham is just like, oh no, for sure, this is a great idea, we're going to do it. I'm like, no. I think we're good. Hey, we don't need to go any faster. Oh man, that's funny. Do you think it's a lot more dangerous now in the last couple of years?
I don't know. I wasn't there before, but the old guys are saying that it's different now. It's more tense. It's more disrespectful also. So I don't know. I can't judge. It's only my second year, but I feel that it's really dangerous now in the bunch.
Yeah, I got it.
Maybe it was the same before, you know. I saw like the interview of Geraint Thomas, who said there is no respect anymore in the bunch, and we saw that. I think Lance Armstrong said that like 20 years ago. So
yeah.
Maybe it doesn't change. I don't know.
You just get old and then you think. Okay. Can you think of like the lowest moment in your career? Has there been like a really low moment, like rock bottom in your career ever?
I don't know. Maybe when you are injured, you know, it's really special. And it depends how you are injured. Like I had some knee problems in the past, and knee problems, the problem is that you don't really have a diagnosis. Like the doc doesn't tell you like you have this and that and you have to wait 2 weeks and it'll be okay. It's like, we don't really know what it is. You have to rest, but we don't know how much time. So it's really frustrating to just wait and don't know. You don't know what to do. So it's always like that with knee problems or maybe back problems. I have some back problems right now and I don't really have one diagnosis who said like I have to do this or do that to heal. So, but I didn't have a lot of a big period of when I was injured. So I don't really know that. But yeah,
there haven't been any massive setbacks yet.
Yeah, no massive setbacks for me for the moment. But you know, it will happen. It's the risk of being pro cyclist.
Yeah,
and when you have a big crash or something like that, I think it can be really hard.
Yeah. What was it? When you had your knee problems, how did you fix it? What was the problem? Did you ever figure out what to do to fix it?
Yeah. We finally figured that, but it was always caused by something like, maybe it was a cleat that moved a little bit, the saddle that was a little bit lower, some stupid things that happen sometimes and you don't notice, and then it's too late when you start to have a painful knee. So you have to find the source and then just take some rest. The hardest part,
yeah.
to force yourself to do nothing, and when you have some problem, just tell you to stop. The hardest part, I think.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, like the cleats is the obvious one. I just know for me, I used to have pain on the, because it's really hard to figure it out. But like for me, at least the problem was I would get pain on the inside of my knees, and it was because like the way I solved it was getting custom insoles in my shoes, and then it would like support my arches more, and then it kept my knees to track straight, because if I didn't have those, my knees would kind of like collapse in, and then I'd get pain on the inside of my knees.
I kind of have the same problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have custom insoles as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think everyone has custom insoles now.
I think that's one of the big secret. Well, it's not really a secret, but people just don't realize it in the world tour. Mm. And or like in pro cycling in general, everybody has custom insoles, but you can't see it because they're inside the shoe.
Yeah.
Who makes yours?
Yeah, but it's, I don't know the word in English. It's foot specialist, how do you say
podolog. Oh, an orthotist? Is that orthotic? Orthotic doctor, something like that? Something like that? I don't know.
Yeah.
Foot doctor.
It's really customized. But yeah, it's really important. You know, when you just start to do 5 hours every day, if you count the number of pedal stroke you do in 5 hours, if one little thing is not in the line, can be really problematic.
Yeah, for sure. Huh. Did you ever figure out what you needed to do to fix your back problems?
I'm currently at home right now. I'm taking some days off the bike because I started to have back problems like 2 weeks ago, and it didn't get better, so I had to stop. I don't really know what caused it. Maybe one crash, I don't really know. I just have to do some mobility exercise every day, just move and take some rest to heal. But there's nothing crazy you can do about it. So you just have to wait and hope it will heal, you know?
Yeah. Did the team give you anything else to help you to try to recover? Like just the mobility exercises, rest. Is there anything else they told you to do to try to heal it quicker?
No, not really. No, there's nothing more things you can do. I saw some physio, some kine, some, everything I can do. I did it, and I'm trying to as much as I can to heal now. So, yeah.